Taste of Ireland with Ireland's Blue Book, a romantic collection of Irish country house hotels, manor houses, castles and restaurants. Ireland'sBlueBook.com.
On Dublin's easy place to relax.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
You're very welcome to A Taste of Ireland. And this evening, my special guest is family father and son, Aidan and Declan McManus, are from the legendary King Citric restaurant in Howth, a famous seafood restaurant. Aidan, you're very welcome to the programme. I know it was a long travel, a long journey in for you today.
Oh, but not at all.
I totally appreciate you coming in to us. How are you keeping?
Very well, yeah. The pandemic has been a tough time, a difficult time. But we are coming out of it now, and we have a good setup with plenty of outdoor space. And our restaurant has plenty of ventilation. For our residents, we only have 8 rooms, so we can keep all the residents 2 metres apart, etc. So we're in a good space, and we're very busy. The weather, obviously, is a huge factor in Howth and for outdoor dining. Now, it's a bit chilly at times. There's an east wind that blows there. Bring your long sleeves. We will supply a few blankets and cushions, but you are outdoors, and it is Ireland.
Howth has been a great place for people to be able to go to have sort of a semblance of a holiday feeling. And I mean, your restaurant, of course, has been going, is it 43 years, Aidan?
Is our 50th year.
Oh, sorry, 50th year. I was being generous there. That's wonderful. 50 years, well, that's amazing.
Yeah, so on the 18th of August will be our 50th birthday.
If I could just bring you back, I suppose, a little bit to your own background in food, in terms, I know you travelled and, you know, a lot, and you got to do a lot of interesting stuff in your early life. It'd be lovely to hear a little bit about that.
Well, I wasn't academic, I suppose. It's the nice way to say that I flunked school and spent most of my time in St. Anne's Park, as against going to St. Paul's College and Belgrove, etc. So my mother was a fairly strong woman and got me to go into a kitchen. I didn't want it. I had no ambition whatsoever to do anything like that. And I went to a little hotel in Westland Row, which no longer exists. And I thought I was having a great working week. I thought I cycled in, cycled out, and I was picking spinach leaves and washing pots. And I thought I was doing a very good job. And the woman came and told me that I was no bloody good and she didn't want me anymore. So that was probably the first real kick-up that I got, that a stranger was telling me this type of thing. I was listening to it at home all the time, but that didn't make any difference. So I went off then and I got some work in the Metropole in O'Connell Street. No longer exists. This is 1962-63. Then a couple of us that met when we went off to London at the tender age of 17, thinking that we knew everything. Worked in several places in London, from the talk of the town was the first job, and there was something like 60-odd people working in the kitchen between wash-up, waiting and serving and everything. It was a big theatre restaurant. 5 could speak English. But we survived all of that, and we went on, worked in Quaglino's, then went to Switzerland for 6 months. It was there really that people were talking, you know, that I was a great guy. I had sort of worked in London. I was now in Switzerland. I had come from Ireland. I was really dedicated to the job. I was not. I was just doing a job and wanting to get on with things. They sort of really made me feel, you know, I was with our own age, 19, 20-year-olds, and you'd be in the pub with them and so on. They were studying architecture or engineering, but I was their hero. I haven't been to London and to Dublin and etc. So I really got serious about it. So when I went back to London again, I started reading about it and sort of saying that, you know, it's time now to sort of settle in and learn what you're doing and make notes and take recipes and do all the other things. Before, it was just one job to the other. There was none of these TV programs and star chefs, and there was college. I went to Westminster for about 4 days, college there, but we couldn't keep it up because the hours that we had to work. But I got serious about it then and carried on from there.
And you were in Guernsey as well at one stage.
I was, yeah. I was working in the House of Commons, which was a fantastically interesting job. They gave us the same time off as the MPs, so we got months off in the summer and all unpaid.
That was a clever move.
Well, again, it sort of fell into it. I was interested in the fact that I was working in the members' dining room and met Edward Heath and Harold Wilson, and they were the people in power at the time, and David Steele, and they all would come up to me and ask for the various things, you know. Took a phone call there and said, this guy in Guernsey said that he was looking for chefs to go out and work for Easter, knowing that the House of Commons would be closed. So he paid the airfare and put us up in a room. We worked for him, and of course he promises the sun, moon and stars, so we left our jobs and went out there. It was a disaster. Actually, I was getting married, and when I went back to London to get married, went my honeymoon, came back, and he sacked me the day I arrived back because he said that I was supposed to work that day, and I said, no, I'm coming. I shouldn't have airline tickets and everything. No.
Yeah, yeah.
So there was no laws there, so he couldn't do anything about it. So I'm committed to an apartment and everything else. And I got a magnificent job then in La Frégate as the second chef, the sous chef. I was the first English-speaking person into that kitchen. It was all French or Swiss. And after a week, the chef, who was only a couple of years older than me, he came up in his dreadful English-French accent, told me that I couldn't cook. And I said, you're right. I had never experienced anything like this before. And to give you an example, we would go out into the garden in the morning and pick the vegetables for the afternoon, for the lunch. Back in the evening, pick them for the evening. Except we weren't to be seen in the garden and working on Sundays. So we had to pick our potatoes and our various fruits on Saturday afternoon for Sunday. And that we had to keep in a box of earth, the potatoes. So that was the attention to detail that they had there. And again, as I said, they were all continentals working in the place. And René, the head waiter, again, a very unusual thing would happen in this place. People would leave wine behind them, bottles, especially at lunchtime. They would buy a bottle and have two sips and leave.
They weren't Irish. They certainly were not.
So René gave us a whole lot of instruction on drinking wine, what to look for, and so on. Now, it was a minuscule of information, but it was a great base to start that there was something different beside food and so on. But everything we had was fresh. There was the freezing and frozen was such a bad word in those days, you know, because mostly it was done incorrectly. People waited until there was no use and then tried to get a few more days by putting it in a freezer. Too late. Then my parents found this house, and we lived in Clontarf. Mm. My parents found, my mother used to come out to Holt nearly every Thursday to buy the fish for the Friday meal. And she saw that this house was for sale on the East Pier, the top of the East Pier. And they made a couple of inquiries, and they wrote to me because we had no mobiles or no texts or whatever, so it was slow old snail mail to get backwards and forwards. And they said, would I think of coming home? And they would invest in this house. It was big enough to open a restaurant. And they, my parents, my sister and my wife, myself, could live in the place as well as have the restaurant. So I came back anyway, and it was a dark, dreary, north-facing building. Hadn't anything been spent on it in years. And I was very disappointed.
It wasn't a frégate anyway.
It certainly wasn't overlooking the harbour.
Not at that stage.
So she said, you know, told me the potential, really. I mean, it was her foresight that saw the potential of it and so on.
Brilliant.
And they bought the house. We sold the house in Dollymount and we all moved in.
And of course, you would have come back then. You would have come back with this very, very interesting, I mean, very sort of high-end culinary standard, I suppose, yeah, in those years with the experience you would have had. So this would have been quite interesting for you. You would have had this idea, I suppose, of I'm going to do something here that's going to be unique and one of the first to do it, I suppose.
Well, there were very, very few. There was no restaurants in Holt. The Abbey Tavern sold the bacon and cabbage and maybe they would have prawns sent up and crab claws sent up by the fishermen for a few pints. And there was nobody selling food. On the other side, we had the castle, Sutton Castle. And they were selling good food. And the Collar of Gold in Dublin Airport was about the only other place in North Dublin selling good food at that stage. So we took off fairly quickly. The father, being a newspaper man, got a bit of unreasonable publicity, I think.
Brilliant.
He was in the Irish Independent. And we got a lot of the journalists would come out and put us on the road. But again, it was very difficult times, and I had got used to working with things like courgettes, aubergines, peppers and so on, and the fresh fish. Now, the fish was fantastic in Holt even then, but to try and get some of the prime fish, they didn't want to sell it to me because that was for the women, that was for the families on the hill now, not you people coming in and rooting through the boxes to trying to get these soles and John Dory's and turbots and things. But eventually we got around that. And I'd go into the Dublin market and buy fish there. I did that for nearly 17 years. Amazingly that I'd have to go into Dublin market. But the fishing scene was so different then because boats that were landing fish in Killybegs were sending it to Dublin, getting a price and bringing it back to sell in Killybegs.
It was totally different times.
So we'd go in to the market and bring out the product, and I got some of the stalls there, a guy called Kevin and Andy Boggan, they started bringing in the courgettes and the cauliflower and the peppers and so on. And I remember putting an ad in the Times asking for people, would they grow vegetables and herbs, fresh herbs. They were just non-existent.
Yeah.
If you wanted herbs, you had to go and get the dried herbs. A couple of people took me up and we had a lovely herb garden up in the Hill of Holt. And then Brigitte McGuire had a very large garden out in Malahide and saw me the courgettes.
Wonderful. So you came back and you created your whole culinary paradise.
People find it hard to believe that those things weren't available.
Yeah, very innovative of you, though, you know, that you weren't able to get. A lot of people would probably have just said, oh, we'll do what you actually, you knew what you wanted and you created it.
No, I had several salespeople would come to the door and they'd say, you know, try to sell me the frozen vegetables that I couldn't exist, that, you know, you might get a month where you get something, but you'd need to buy this, that and that. And I said, well, you know, worked the last couple of years. Now, London markets probably were selling all of this stuff and it was a world hub.
Yeah.
Dublin market was, you know, it was very atmospheric.
Slightly behind. You were a trailblazer, really, I suppose.
Well, there was a lot. I mean, any of us were. I mean, as we got further in, the good food guides and the various other things would pick up and people would, there was, you know, more and more people were starting to get into business. But, I mean, there was Declan Ryan in Arbutus Lodge in Cork. He used to get a lot of product down there, cheeses, the first of the Irish cheese, and they were getting too much to sell and I would buy that, go in and collect it in the bus depot and things like that, you know.
Wonderful.
But, you know, you had to work very hard to find the product. It wasn't like today. Today, I'm not saying it's the easiest thing in the world, but it's easier.
Yeah,
a lot easier, and there's a lot more interest. There's an awful lot of people all around the country doing the organic gardening, doing the vegetables, doing the herbs, etc. But we had to fight for them in the 70s and most of the 80s.
That brings us along nicely to your first choice of music this evening. What have you chosen for us?
I Don't Like Mondays from Bob Geldof. Besides doing a bit of cooking, a lot of cooking at home, I had to get some relief and I took up sailing in Holt. And before my first Fastnet race, we were down in Cowes feeling unbeatable. We were going to win everything, and Bob Geldof, this was playing out in the Three Crowns bar the night before the race, and we just commanded the jukebox and played it all night. Little did we know that the 1979 Fastnet was a disaster, but that was it.
A Taste of Ireland with Ireland's Blue Book, a romantic collection of Irish country house hotels, manor houses, castles and restaurants. Ireland'sBlueBook.com
on Dublin's easy place to relax.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
You're very welcome back to A Taste of Ireland. This evening my special guest is Aidan McManus, who I'm enjoying chatting to about the history of the famous King Citric restaurant here in Howth. That's lovely, Aidan, to hear there before the break just about the how you created it. You brought all this wonderfully exotic things, including courgettes into Howth and stuff. So you developed on then, I suppose, and the business grew. I know you went through a few recessions and things, but it was to be an interesting when it all got off the ground and you were bringing your menus to the Irish, to the Dublin guests here.
Yes, it didn't take us too long. The first menu I can remember, maybe five or six meat dishes and one fish dish, because, again, I didn't think that the Irish, my mother and father didn't think that the Irish would be ready to go for that much fish. But as soon as I started putting this lovely fresh product on the plate, it was snapped up immediately. And most people, you go by side the sea, you think fish. You go into the country and you see a lamb jumping around, you think lamb. That's me anyway. You know, I suppose probably by the middle 70s, 74, 75, we became the fish restaurant. We haven't looked back since there. You know, we've been fortunate enough to have a huge selection of the product. We have noticed over the years that some fish is not as plentiful as it was. There's no question of that. But there's some of them that are totally sustainable and totally available 24/7, 365 type of thing, you know?
I mean, I was looking on social media there at some of the people that have dined with you, and I mean, sublime comments about people that just keep, obviously you have your regulars and you have tourists that flock out to, so, but not always easy to do, and I mean, something that you seem to have completely got the knack of anyway.
Well, I wouldn't say completely. We've had our off moments. We've had the few complaints and mistakes, justifiably, because things can go wrong. As you said, less is more, because if you overcook fish, it's not good. And it could take 30 seconds to a minute, and you're waiting around. It happens. We try, obviously, for it not to happen. And we do our best at that, with maintaining standards and maintaining the freshness of the product, which is what we have relied on for the 50 years that we've been there. It hasn't let us down.
I know you're part of the, which is we call the prestigious Blue Book. I mean, that was lovely. I suppose to get invited to join that as well as one of the restaurants.
It was. I had tried on a couple of occasions, and we weren't really a country house. They didn't really want people in Dublin getting involved in this book. And I think Francis Brennan might have been the president when we went into Fingal. So now we were not in Dublin, we were in Fingal.
You were rezoned.
So that made it easier for some of the people to accept us as a member of the Country House and Restaurant Association. I'll never forget on our first AGM, I won't mention the gentleman that said it, but he stood up at the AGM and said, I really don't understand this Country House and Restaurant Association. There is now members here that open out onto the street.
Scandalous. Wow.
So, no, we've maintained our position. We joined in the late 80s, early 90s, and then by 2000 we put in the 8 bedrooms, which makes it much more of a country house type of place. Over all the bedrooms overlooking the sea. Beautiful location that we have,
yeah.
And got maximised it now.
Wonderful. You know? And I mean, was that, I mean, that's obviously to go into the accommodation business as well. I suppose that was a bit of a big step, because it's another business on a business, really, isn't it?
It is, but it's sort of, one progresses all the time, at least that would be my opinion, that you don't stop.
Yeah.
People thought maybe knock down the whole building in 1999 and restart again. At my age, as you say, you know, maybe that was a step too far. But I didn't think so. My present wife didn't think so. We thought we were doing exactly the right thing. We had the space. We had the area. My parents had demised. They had lived over the restaurant. So we were able to relocate the restaurant to upstairs, put in the 8 bedrooms. And for a few years, until that awful recession came, I had a magnificent wine cellar, my pride and joy, for many years. And that was purpose-built. You could go in, smell the bottles, and etc. But unfortunately, 2008, 2007, 2008... put that in perspective.
yeah, that was a difficult. I mean, did you, when you compare that, Aidan, I suppose, to what we've just come through now, I suppose this is unprecedented in a way compared to a normal recession, because this was something we could never have seen happening, I guess.
Well, the recession was a major factor for restaurants, fine dining type of things, because it was reliant on corporate business. You know, we built up that corporates, the corporates were coming in and out. And pretty much overnight that stopped, and we haven't got them back. The pandemic, I have to say, the government has been extraordinarily good to us with all the help that they're giving us. It hasn't been easy. There's no question thing of saying that. And as I said earlier, we are quite lucky with our outdoor and our location and our takeaways that we are able to continue to survive and continue to employ a few more people. But we would not have been anywhere near doing that had we not had the government intervention.
Yeah.
Because we got nothing in the recession. We had to sell all the wine. My son Declan got involved with us then. He had set up his own business in yacht brokering, and not so much brokering, but maintenance and working on yachts and so on. But nobody was paying him. We had this wine cellar. We said we'd try and open a wine bar by doing nothing really, except letting them in and giving them a steak sandwich or a prawn tempura or something. But Declan said, no, knock it out. We'll build a proper bar, open the door, bring back the window that I had sealed off to keep the wine cellar in its proper thing, you know.
Very good. And of course, that's wonderful. We'll be chatting to Declan a little bit later. And the East Cafe Bar, of course, I mean, that was, you know, through the recession, I mean, that was a great idea because, I mean, like, I suppose it's all about changing and adapting these days, isn't it?
Well, that's it. I mean, over the 50 years, there's been many changes and adaptations to what we do. And that was certainly a godsend to us because we would not have survived without it. We were going to go down. I had nothing left to put back into the place. And thankfully, we owned the sort of building that we weren't. Well, we did have the loan, but it wasn't that was going to kill us. It was just lack of business. And the whole ethos of dining is changing rapidly. As I would say, the Googleites do not want to spend 3 to 2 hours at a meal. They photograph it immediately, eat it immediately, and talk about it forever. But they're not going to spend it.
I don't know. I think now the next 6 to 12 months, I think a lot of people will be delighted to spend.
Yes.
I think you'll find, you know, and the photograph thing, you can just ban that from the restaurant. You know, that's it. Not a favourite of mine either. But people love sharing experiences now, don't they? They get so excited.
Yeah.
It must have been, I mean, you must have had some great people through your doors. I mean, you know, because the King Citric would have been a place, I suppose, for people like, you know, again, like I had the lovely Stefan on there a few weeks ago chatting about, you know, Gilbert and the experience and the treat. I mean, I suppose you would get a lot of that. And you must have had a lot of interesting celebrities through your doors over the years who would just, they knew exactly what they wanted and they knew food and, you know, they had the wallet ready.
There certainly was. I mean, between politicians and rock stars and movie stars and so on, we've had our fair share of them, particularly in the 70s and 80s, because we were on our own. Charlie Haw, he was a very regular customer. But my father, being in the newspaper business, had always said, don't start going down the road of telling everybody who they are and so on. So we always kept it fairly quiet, low-key. We didn't mention those. There's no loads of pictures on the wall with me sharing with all of these people, etc. As you can see in some places, I'm not criticising it, but our thing. But one time, Charlie used to bring the family in for Maureen's birthday every other year, maybe. To us, and maybe to a restaurant in Malahide or something like that. But I got these enormous amount of calls one that evening, you know, who's with them, what are they eating, and which is a costume, what are they drinking, etc., etc. And I was telling nothing to anybody. And then I got some of my father's ex-colleagues were sort of trying to put the pressure on me. And I said, oh, no, I'm sorry, this is private, like, you know, etc. When we remember you. So when Charlie was going out the door, and he says, I hope you got a good touch. And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, we let the press office know we were here tonight.
So, oh, God, that's brilliant, brilliant. Yeah. He was good. He's a generous spirit.
No, indeed, yeah. Indeed.
But Aidan, it's been an absolute pleasure to chat to you this evening. And I'm looking very forward to getting out for a nice bit of lobster and a nice bit of seafood out to see you soon. And can you tell us, what have you chosen for your second piece of music this evening?
My Love is a Tall Ship by The Furies. A song that came to my mind at the time the Asgard 2 sank in the Bay of Biscay in 2008. And I just thought it's very reminiscent of that. And it's unfortunate that we haven't been able to replicate and bring back another sail training ship into Ireland. So that's it.
A Taste of Ireland with Ireland's Blue Book. A romantic collection of Irish country house hotels, manor houses, castles and restaurants. Ireland'sBlueBook.com
on Dublin's easy place to relax.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
You're very welcome back to A Taste of Ireland. And now I'm joined by Declan McManus, the son of Aidan from the King's Citric in Howth. Declan, you set up the East Cafe Bar in 2012.
Yeah, me and my now wife came into the business in 2012. I was looking after kind of racing yachts at the time, and that was going rapidly south at the time, and as kind of with the restaurant. So we had to combine forces somewhere. I suppose it all happened very quickly. You know, we had a quick meeting one day, and about 8 days later, I was hammering in and ordered a skip and just started building it. Which wouldn't faze me at all. Like, it was good to just get stuck in straight away, not too much thinking. Knew what we had to do. I think, remember thinking that it was going to cost about 15 or 20 grand, and I think it ended up at about 120, and took my dad's pension, all of his wine.
You were very popular, were you?
So to say it was a risk was quite an understatement.
But that's interesting. And how was the transition for you then from, you know, obviously you were in a very different business, the yacht world, and now you were going to be going into the whole food business and hospitality?
I suppose, you know, it wasn't until I was actually stuck into it for about a year, I suppose, that I knew that I already knew all of this stuff. I was born there. I saw it every day, you know, at our own kitchen table at home. The discussion was the same, and everything, it just came very naturally, you know, and I was kind of amazed myself about what I'd picked up along the way, you know.
I mean, you were bringing something that would have been quite to match the sort of changes that had occurred then, really, wouldn't you, from the old-fashioned sort of way people would have dined, I suppose.
Yeah, and we knew that we wanted to have a place with zero commitment, you know, that you could come in, have a coffee and leave, or else you could come in, have a lobster, and that was it. You know, you could come in on your own, you could come in with 10 mates, you could stay there all night. And that just led on to where we are now, you know what I mean? We're not changing that. You can still do what you want there, you know?
Summer in Howth, for a lot of people, would be synonymous with lobster and ice cream, right? I think, to a certain extent.
Seagulls.
If I could be as a base. Now, lobster would be daunting for a lot of people, you know? I mean, remember getting a chef to cook it for me, and there was so much involved in it. I mean, is it so, you've become really specialist in that there. Now, I know in all seafood, but in particular, people seem to just gravitate to the King Citric when they want that quintessential lobster experience.
Yeah.
So is this, I mean, could you just bring us through a little bit about your, you know, how the process works? And
lobster is our thing, you know, and it's not something everyone can do, you know. It's not something every restaurant can do, or even every place. It takes up a lot of room. It takes up a tank. You've got to know your suppliers, where it's coming from. Like, well, suppliers are just fishermen, you know, that walk in with a plastic bag whenever they feel like it, you know. And that to me, like, was just really, like, special. And I really took something to that it was, like, there's so few places now where you can sit and you're eating your lunch that was literally caught 150 metres away. Mm. And brought in, it sits in our tank for a while, and then we take it out and you're eating it 15 minutes later. You know, that is something still really special. And
yeah, I mean, I was reading there where you said before that the only thing better than lobster on a sunny day with lobster with a crisp and cold glass of wine, and it was, you were saying your housewife was a lemony Pinot Blanc from Alsace, which your parents had brought back or discovered on a wine trip in 1981. And I think it's simply because it pairs so beautifully with lobster. And that kind of conjures up, just for me, the ideal image of just, you know, absolute luxury in a way, right? That the pairing of those two. Is that something that just comes with the years of experience? And of course, I know traveling and bringing all that back to one place.
Yeah, and we've broken down the luxury of eating lobster a bit as well. You know, people used to see it as a once-a-year thing. Now, like, we just have people calling into us now and they've just had a swim in Ballyscad and they're having a quick lobster roll on the wall and then they're going home, you know. I remember when we were open in East and I was putting lobster and chips and my dad was just thinking, who is going to want chips with a lobster, you know? And look where we are now, you know.
Sounds quite Belgian in a way, the moves, doesn't it?
Yeah.
When you eat food yourself or when you go to other restaurants, when you're in the hospitality business, do you find you're fussier or you're least fussier? Or
no, we're the easiest people in the world to please. Yeah, really are. Like,
and I mean, people now, Declan, with the changes as well, and you probably find with the way things changed, people are going and they're staying like for a few nights. I suppose maybe it would have been traditionally one night or two nights. They're now travelling and they're actually staying in Ireland, discovering Ireland again. You're probably getting lots of people from all over now coming.
We do, and we've lots of good Irish customers that stay with us. But I think, in general, there's so much more to do. Mm. You know, in Howth, even 5 or 10 years ago, there wasn't a whole lot. Now there's tour boats, there's tour guides, there's anything and everything that you want to fill a day with now you can do, you know.
And in terms of that, your own day then, I mean, does it begin at 5 a.m. in the morning? I mean, if your typical day, are you picking the fish at that, or what's your own kind of typical day at this?
I don't have a typical day. Yeah. Every day is kind of slightly different. The thoughts are like going to fish markets and all that kind of thing is kind of past. We were laughing about this the other day, that most of our fish now gets bought and sold on WhatsApp before you get out of bed.
It's amazing the way things have changed. Yeah. People wouldn't even think that would be the case now, but yeah. I suppose it's true, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because the world has totally changed in terms of connectivity as well.
Yeah. Yeah, and you wake up and you see the pictures of what's there and, you know, you trust who you're buying from. You have these relationships with them. I'm just always busy, you know what I mean? I just get up every morning and there's something to be done. I mean,
obviously, when you're passionate like you are yourself, I mean, it's just something that's sort of almost in your blood, really, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, and you don't, you know, you have, like, when you have a good day in a restaurant, like, you wonder, how is it that good, you know? It's the best job in the world when everything's going right. But then you have Monday after Sunday. That brings you back to earth.
I had a very well-known chef chatting to me recently from Kilkenny, saying he wasn't particularly fond of, he'd gone through a period of vegans and gluten-free. And he was saying, I know that it became a thing before COVID, and I think now people are just dying to get a rest or table anywhere they don't come. Have you found, is that something that is a big problem with fish? I suppose it's not so much of a problem, really, is it?
Not really. We they don't really come near us that much. And do you know what? We actually, interestingly, have quite a lot of vegan customers that will eat lobster, and they'll eat crab, and they'll eat oysters, and they'll eat mussels, because I've been able to tell them and educate them on where it's coming from. There's no bycatch, there's no road miles, there's, you know, this is so sustainable and safe, and we've been doing it for 50 years out of the same bay, you know, and they go, yeah, grand, I'll eat it.
That's fascinating, yeah. Actually. That's really, really interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It is very much about the education, isn't it?
And yeah,
it's
it is.
So lovely, yeah. It's so lovely that you actually, you're like your produce, I suppose, what's called slow food these days. It comes from literally where you're living, and yeah. it makes a huge difference, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know every bit of the story, and it's different than a lot of restaurants in that, you know, so much of our work is done before it gets to the plate.
Yeah,
and then we just put it on a plate and send it out to a customer. But all that work is already done. Like, we've got these amazing fishermen. Like, I'd know down to, like, what type of pots, what ground they're working, the time of year. You know, I'd know that the tides are up next week so that we're not going to have anything, you know. And it's all of this work that goes in just to get these onto a plate. We do very little with the actual plate once it's there, you know.
Well, I'm not sure about that, because it usually tastes pretty amazing from what I can hear. Rick Stein is, of course, one of my great fans, you know, great man for fish as well. He loves simplicity. He was saying sometimes just a pot of mussels. For yourself now, if you were, you know, on a day off and you were going, what's your favourite for lunch? What's your guilty pleasure?
Just simple fish. Like, it's just, like, I'd say my favourite bread, like when we have breakfast, we have 8 rooms, and then, like, so if I find myself on a breakfast shift, I'll always just sit there afterwards and have a piece of fish with a poached egg on it.
Gorgeous. Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, because simplicity is so good, isn't it? Sometimes just those simple flavours and done very well, I guess.
Yeah.
When you travel, I suppose, when we get back to travelling, do you love travelling in terms, do you get a lot of inspiration? I know your dad and mom, like, found some great wines. I think that's one of the great things we miss about travelling, you know, that we can discover wonderful little wines in a little bodega somewhere in Spain, or, you know, up the side of a vineyard in France. Is that something that you're looking forward to getting back to again?
Yeah, I wouldn't be so keen on the vineyards, but I find myself getting up at 4:30 in the morning to find fish markets and just roam around, see what's landing there, see what boats they're using. You know, I just find that fascinating, you know.
Brilliant. So for the future, for the coming summer now, what can people expect when they pop out? If they can get a reservation, hopefully. I think things seem to be looking pretty busy, which is good.
It is, yeah.
What have you been working hard on, some very exciting new kind of menu ideas? Or is it a kind of, you know, don't fix it unless it's broken sort of thing?
It's a bit of that, but, you know, like, we're running on a very tight team at the moment, you know, a really good tight team. And it's not something that we're looking to expand on at the moment. We've just hit a really nice balance, and we just want to get the rest of the summer done. Lots of lobster, lots of crab, lots of prawns. And then we're just going to take the winter as it comes. It's too far away these days to plan anything else. Oh.
Listen, it sounds wonderful. With the crisp glass of that nice Alsace wine that we were talking about, wouldn't that be heaven? Well, listen, Declan, it's been a great pleasure to talk to you, right? And it's great to get that passion when it comes across from people that love food. What is your choice of music for us this evening to finish off?
It's Ran from the Future Islands. When we closed, we got closed in the first lockdown, and we turned into a takeaway straight away. And I just remember sitting there, just the utter quietness of the restaurant. We just, when all the fridges are off, all the coolers are down, like, there's no glass washer, there's no refrigeration at the back. And we just put on this album, and it just made everything a bit better, you know.
Great. Before I finish off, what is your, for anybody who wants to get info or look at your menus or books of, what's your website?
It's kingcitric.ie.
Brilliant.
Our Instagram is king_citric.
Yeah, and of course, lots of wonderful Instagrammable pictures, I can imagine.
Yeah, of
stuff. Brilliant. Yeah. Listen, Declan, and I'd like to thank your dad, Aidan. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. It's been a pleasure to talk to you both this evening, and thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having us. Pleasure.